The El Conservador Radio Show is sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform and George Rodriguez on 930 AM, The Answer. Time for the El Conservador Radio Show with George Rodriguez. George is a constitutional conservative who loves to expose fake news and liberals. Be a part of the show. Call 210-308-8867. And now, El Conservador, George Rodriguez.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas. Welcome to our show, my friends, on this Saturday, February the 24th, 2024. The last Saturday in February. We're going to start March. I mean, this year is already going so fast, my friends. Incredible. All right. So welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us, my friends. Let me begin by thanking our sponsor, FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the nation's number one advocate for immigration control, for immigration, for legal immigration, for border security. They are the ones. If you want to know anything about border security, about legal immigration, my friends, and the problems that we are facing right now with the open border, the illegal immigration invasion, you can go to fairus.org. Again, fairus.org. There you can find all sorts of information. So let me tell you who our guests are, and we'll jump into our show right away. Our first guest is Mr. Randy Clark. He is a regular guest with us. He is a Breitbart reporter on the border here in South Texas, and he's going to be giving us an update of what is going on, my friends. The trickle, the invasion of the crossings, the number of crossings of illegal immigrants into the United States, my friends, has gone down to a trickle. Now, there's two reasons for that, and Randy's going to talk to you about them. First of all, the fence is working. Can you believe it? Fences work. Yes, the fence that the state of Texas, the Governor Abbott, has put up on the border here in Eagle Pass and in Del Rio in particular, it's working, and it's causing illegal aliens to think twice about coming through Texas. Also, there is the new legislation, the new law that was passed, that any illegal aliens trespassing will be arrested and will be sent to a port of entry to either go back across the river or to enter properly. This is not them. This is not the state of Texas usurping the Border Patrol. This is the state of Texas redirecting illegal immigration, and so that it can be counted, so that it can be controlled somewhat. So those two factors. But also there's a third factor, and Randy's going to be talking to you about it, which is very, very disturbing. And that is the control of that Mexico is exerting on illegal aliens. So you're going to want to hear about that. You're also going to want to hear from a new guest, Arturo Fontes, who is a retired FBI agent. He's going to be chatting with us about what is going on the other side of the border with crime. Then we've got my good friend, Mr. Silvio Canto, who is a national blogger. He's going to be giving us some very, very good insight into the politics of Mexico. There have been some huge demonstrations in Mexico against the current president of Mexico, and you're going to want to hear what the politics that is going on over there. Our final guest is Ms. Irene Armendariz Jackson, who is another good friend. She's a regular guest. She is in El Paso. She is also with the Border Security Coalition. She's going to be chatting with us, my friends, about what is going on in El Paso with the illegal immigration problem there. They have had some real problems with the open border and homelessness there. So, welcome to the show, my friends. Sit back and enjoy it. Call your buddies, call your friends, let them know that the program is on. You're going to want to hear what we've got to say, what our guests have got to say. So without further ado, let's go to Randy Clark, our first guest. Welcome to the show. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got our good friend, Mr. Randy Clark, reporter with Breitbart at the border here in South Texas. And I wanted to get him on to give us an update, as he usually does, because, Randy, I understand that not only do we have drugs coming north of the border now, as well as tons of illegal aliens, but now we've got environmental issues like raw sewage. Tell us about all this stuff that's happening. Give us an update, please.
Well, so we're still experiencing a slowdown. At least Texas is experiencing a slowdown, a significant. Almost every border sector in Texas is doing less than what they were doing in December. We're at about half speed right now. In Eagle Pass, for instance, in December, we were seeing 5,000, up to 5,000 crossings a day on average in December. We're now seeing that at less than 600-700 around Eagle Pass. So with apprehensions right now, as late as 2 days ago, we're about 5,000 nationwide per day for the Border Patrol. That pales in comparison to the 10 to 14,000 we were seeing in Del Rio. So there's a definite fix going on between Mexico and the United States. Mexico has employed tens of thousands of Guardia Nacional soldiers and regular army and even some out of their Marines to make sure that that bestia train is almost void of any migrants getting to the United States. There's a lot being held back in Mexico and Tapachula, Oaxaca, and Mexico City. And many have been deported to their home countries in Central America. And on the Biden side of things, we're seeing some removal processes happening here in Eagle Pass that did not happen in the previous 3 years. They're actually detaining migrants in the soft-sided processing facilities. They're scheduling some credible fear interviews and adjudicating those asylum cases almost in Trump-like fashion and flying those migrants from the Rio Grande Valley to their home countries, Colombia, Venezuela, and Central America. So we're really seeing an election play that we haven't seen in 3 years, because this is a historic election season for both Mexico and the United States. For one of the few times in the decades, it usually runs almost a quarter century between when our elections and Mexico's presidential elections line up. And this is one of those years. And I think it's going to be something that's going to have drastic impacts on the United States if we see the Biden administration continue and the Morena party from Mexico's President AMLO continue on, with Claudia Sheinbaum winning, and she's ahead in the polls. So we know he's one of those very favorable to the cartel presidents. He believes in hugs and not bullets, you know, like he says, abrazos y no balazos. So she's going to have that same mentality. She's from his ruling party, the Morena party. And I think a lot of this border slowdown is to make citizens on both sides of the border think this problem is solved and not look at that as a factor when they cast their votes in June in Mexico and in November here.
That's, you know, that is absolutely outrageous. Now, speaking of this, lady who probably will become the next president of Mexico, this lady in the Morena party, my understanding is that her background, she is an attorney, but an environmentalist. She is very much an environmentalist, which is very, very interesting, because there is an environmental disaster going on in Tijuana that's affecting the United States. Is there not?
Yes. So she's an engineer, and a lot of her work focuses around sustainable energy, green ideas. She's also somewhat woke. She is Jewish in faith. She'll be the first female Mexican president if she wins. I mean, she's not there yet, but she's polling significantly ahead of the other party's candidates. So there's also a factor of U.S. residents that can vote. There's millions in the United States who hold dual citizenship that if they register, they can cast votes. And that Morena party is really reaching out to get those people engaged, because they advocate for them on the Mexican side. So that's another interesting dynamic also. But yes, you know, there's a lot going on with the environmental issues between Mexico and the United States, and there has been for years. And it goes beyond the raw sewage. We know what Imperial Beach in San Diego, because that was where I spent 10 years. My first 10 years in the Border Patrol was in El Centro sector. The most polluted areas on the California border are that Imperial Beach area near the Tijuana River, and also the New River in Mexicali, between Mexicali and Calexico. And so some of that has been mitigated and it's in the process of being mitigated in Mexicali, which is a city of several million. They've got a new sewage treatment plant that's getting some of that sewage out, and they're going to contain that river through the populated areas by boxing it in, so to speak. However, what that doesn't address is the chemical pollution and the carcinogens that are going in from the maquila industry, and those products are for us and for other parts of the world. That's what's speaking to this, because nothing is being done, even in Imperial Beach, to address that. Imperial Beach is getting the sewage, but they're also getting the carcinogens.
Wow.
And that's what keeps, I think, both governments from really taking a heavy hand in this, is that now you're involving businesses. Now you're asking them to spend additional monies to stop polluting waters that in both cases flow into the United States. That new river travels 60 miles to the Salton Sea, and those carcinogens are still traveling and getting deposited in one of the most, you know, abundant agricultural regions in the United States, in that Imperial Valley. So there's a lot going on, but anytime you start bringing in business, private sector, and the government, things tend to slow down because of the influence and the lobbying effect that those businesses can have. You know, both parties love cheap labor. They're not going to do a whole lot, I think, to get those carcinogens reduced anytime soon, including this next president of Mexico, potentially, Claudia Sheinbaum.
Now, another issue with that, which is very, very interesting to me, is that being that Sheinbaum is of the Jewish faith, Mexico has historically sided with the Palestinians in the UN. Historically, I mean, I remember them taking a very, very angry position after the Seven-Day War. I'm just very, very curious how all of this is going to work out.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. But, you know, Sheinbaum has kind of moved away from some of her ideals when it comes to what AMLO has done. You know, he's done a lot to empower the domestic production of oil under the private sector, and they're looking kind of to nationalize it in some sense. And so she's remained quiet in that, because some of the Mexico oil producers are not the cleanest. So she's kind of put aside her environmentalist hat to keep in line with the party. So will she do that when it comes to support for the Palestinians, or at least public support? It's going to be something to be seen. But I think the very scary thing is to lose focus on the fact that this migration issue has disappeared from the radar on both sides of the border. Very little media coverage, which we know only on the conservative side, generally speaking, is it addressed here. But now we're not speaking about it at all, hardly. I think you still see a few conservative outlets in California covering what they've got going on, because the imagery is out there now and not Texas. But what the dangerous thing is the cartels being strengthened by a Sheinbaum presidency who's not going to attack them. And the Mexican states right now, with the exception of just a handful, are more violent than they have ever been. And so I think if we don't address on our side getting a president that's more firm on border security, you can expect this fentanyl problem to only worsen. And if Sheinbaum and Biden both get elected, you can just about guarantee we will have unmitigated migration across the southern border for another 4 years to come.
Not to mention probably all sorts of environmental issues that we will have to pay for as well.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. My friend, anything else that you'd like to add before we let you go?
Just love to be the bearer of good news for you, George.
I love it. I love it. You take care, my friends. We've been speaking with our good buddy, Mr. Randy Clark, a reporter with Breitbart at the Texas-Mexican border here. And Randy, we'll get you back on again as these stories continue to unfold and we continue to follow them. So thank you very much.
Awesome, George.
Time to be with us, buddy.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas, and we've got a new guest with us, someone who is with us for the first time, Mr. Arturo Fontes. He has a background in law enforcement, and I'm going to ask him to tell us a little bit about himself, as well as what is his perception of what's going on in the border in regards to criminal activities. Art, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us, buddy.
Great, George. Thanks for having me here. It's my pleasure. It's a privilege to be able to talk to you on your show.
Tell us a little tell us a little bit about your background and then your perception of what's going on at the border right now.
Sure. I retired with the FBI after 28 years of experience. And since then, in the last 10 years, I've worked in the private industry, do consulting work, and I travel frequently to Mexico at least once a month. But before that, I had the unique experience of not only working in Mexico, but I also worked 10 years approximately in San Diego across the border from Tijuana, and I also worked in Laredo, Nuevo Laredo, for approximately 5 years, and I also did two tours to Mexico. So most of my career has been on Mexico. I thought that since when I was working in San Diego, I thought that was probably the most violent drug organization, the Arellano Felix. And then when I got to Nuevo Laredo, I got to learn what it really means, when there's a spillover of violence. And then what I experienced at that time were commando hit squads living in Laredo committing murders on the U.S. side and doing search warrants, and also working with the police where we actually found hand grenades inside vehicles that were going to be used either in the on the U.S. side or Mexico. We also had some shootouts in Laredo, Texas, on this side of the border. We had also kidnappings that actually occurred on the U.S. side in Laredo and then being brought back to Mexico. So that was literally the worst I've seen Mexico. This was during a time of 2004 to 2011 when the CETES emerged and became a very significant threat to law enforcement and around our country. And from being just in one state, normally in Tamaulipas, they spread all over Mexico. And they were the ones that transitioned the old guard of the Sinaloa cartel or the Federation into what it is now. And what it is now is you have organized crime, but it's really disorganized because there's no control, where the cartels now are involved in almost every criminal trade, from drug trafficking, extortion, kidnappings, theft of gasoline, immigration, bringing people in, anything that you could imagine where they could make money, they're making money.
Now, let me ask you, because the concern obviously on our side of the border is going to be their influence, not only on other criminal gangs, like the Mexican Mafia and La Familia and all the ones that we've got on our side, but also their influence on politicians, because in Mexico they definitely influence politicians, do they not?
Yes, just to add to that, at least to give people a mental picture of what's really going on in Mexico, is the Mexican cartels have always had their influence in politics. But now they've integrated themselves so much so, and it's so important for them to be able to compromise the politicians. Similar to what the FARC did in the past, where now they have a political platform. Not only are they an armed and asymmetrical threat, to law enforcement, they also now have become integrated, and they have so much influence now in the political government of Mexico. And if you go to some of the border cities, you also see, more corruption. And, for example, in Laredo, Nuevo Laredo, you have, families that, are American citizens. They may live on the Mexican side, but then they also have people on the U.S. side. So, corruption is more rampant, or it's more prevalent in on border cities than it is on, inside the United States. And that's why, it is important to, to be able to monitor that.
Do you think at this point, we've heard a lot of discussion about designating the cartels terrorist organizations, putting them on a terrorist list. Do you think that would work?
I think that that would be the last resort. I don't think that that should be a viable option right now. I think that the U.S. has still a lot of leverage, and you could liken it to what happened, you know, in the 80s when Kiki Camarena was killed in Mexico. It was a DEA agent that was kidnapped and killed. The U.S. actually shut the border for, you know, a couple of days. The U.S. indicted, you know, several high-level Mexican politicians. And now, you know, we have that option, including the remittances, which I think it was $16 billion last year. Just imagine if the U.S. taxed those remittances going in to Mexico. Our government also, could investigate a lot of these corrupt politicians that have their monies on this side, which we've done it before. And I think it could have an impact, on Mexico. I believe also that, you know, the visas, you know, the consulates, labeling them as terrorists. I know Trump tried to do it, and I know Texas passed legislation, but it still does not have the power of the federal government. That does scare them. Unfortunately, I don't believe it's going to happen because of our nearshoring, and now, with the two wars going on right now, and we're relying a lot on nearshoring and logistics with Mexico, where Mexico now is the number. The U.S. is buying more from Mexico than it is from China, the first time in 20 years. I don't think the U.S. is willing to label the cartels as terrorists, because if we did that, I don't think our government or our people are willing to pay, you know, so much more and inflation on our goods if that happened.
Let me ask you this last question, because it is very, very important that people understand the condition of the government of Mexico. AMLO backed off whenever they were getting ready to arrest the son of El Chapo Guzman in Sinaloa. They were getting ready to, or Culhuacan rather, they were getting ready to arrest him, and the cartels all came out and outgunned the military practically, and he backed off. Does the president of Mexico have any real power at this point over the cartels?
You know, that's a very good question, and that's that question is really significant, because two states in Mexico, Michoacan and Guerrero, are almost ungovernable, and the cartels are making just on immigration, they're making billions of dollars each year, not including the fentanyl and other goods. So they're much more powerful, and I think that if some of these kingpins are arrested, they have contingency plans themselves. That were imagine the DEA office in Mazatlan, they have a group, you know, agents there in Sinaloa. A lot of our agents would be, you know, in harm's way, along with, you know, American citizens that are living also there. So that is significant. That question.
Wow. It is really something that we really, really need to consider. So many facets to this whole situation. Give us a conclusion before we let you go. Where do you think we're going right now?
That's a good question, George. I am very concerned. You know, in my 28 years working, you know, in law enforcement, working and traveling into Mexico, I've never seen both Mexico and the U.S. so vulnerable right now. You have 3.2 million people that have entered the United States illegally, and now you have 0.8 million people came in to the U.S. are gotaways, and some of those people that came in we don't know who these people are, are people that are unfriendly. These people have criminal backgrounds. They were probably smuggling drugs into the U.S. You know, you got other gangs like Tren de Aragua and other groups that are coming in. You know, we got three wars: the economic war with China, the war in the Middle East and the war in Ukraine. So there's a lot of people that don't like us right now. And my concern is that we have people here already, and there's a lot of red flags going on, and it worries me.
Yep. Yeah, it worries a lot of us that are watching this. Arturo, thank you very, very much for joining us today. Folks, we've been talking with a good new friend, Mr. Arturo Fuentes, who is a retired FBI agent. Arturo, we got to get you back on the show again sometime soon so we can talk some more.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
You got it. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez and Conservador talking to you from San Antonio.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to fairus.org.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got our good friend, Mr. Silvio Campo, who is in Dallas. And Silvio is a blogger, writer for American Thinker. And I wanted to get him on because he follows what is going on the international, with the international press, particularly what's happening like in Mexico. And folks, most of us aren't knowledgeable or aware of the politics that is going on just across the border, even though it impacts on us. Silvio, welcome to the show as usual. Thank you for taking time to be with us, my friend.
It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the invitation, George.
Let me ask you, there was a huge, a very, very large demonstration last week in Mexico City against the current president and his policies. I believe that it's not only an issue of the economy, but an issue of the violence that's going on, the inseguridad, as we say, the insecurity that people are feeling. Give us your take on what is going on with the politics and this demonstration down there.
Yeah, well, this is the latest demonstration. There have been others recently. And what is going on is that there is I sort of see it as a great dissatisfaction in the Mexican middle class, in the entrepreneurial class, with the López Obrador administration. And it comes from different sources. I think there's a feeling that López Obrador is a very authoritarian figure who threatens to change the Constitution, who wants to maybe make Mexico a little bit more socialist than the middle class would like. So I think there's just a sense that of a lack of trust, a lack of confidence that this man is not that he's going to stay in power, but that he is going to defend the Constitution. So I think a lot of it comes from that. There's also a great concern about, as you say, the insecurity. And if you talk to any Mexican, they'll tell you that that's the number one problem is insecurity. There's a sense that the streets are not being controlled by the authorities, that there's a lot of criminal elements, there's a lot of young people involved in crime. A lot of it is economics. A good way to make a quick buck is to get into crime. So there's just a lot of dissatisfaction, and they have elections coming up in July. And, the polls are saying that the official candidate, meaning the candidate of the incumbent party, is going to win, but most Mexicans tell me that's not true. I guess we'll have to figure this out when people vote. But there's just a lot of dissatisfaction with López Obrador. There's a feeling that he is the real threat to democracy, George.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. This issue of the of feeling insecure because of the crime, the number of murders that go on. Like in Juarez, just south of El Paso, or Nuevo Laredo, just south of Laredo, is staggering, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more you get out. I mean, in the big cities, you hear about it, but it's when you get out of the big cities where people feel more insecure, because that's when the police and the government has less control, honestly. I mean, there's a think tank in Mexico that reported recently that like half of the country is run by cartels. Now, that's a kind of a misleading figure in a way also, just to be fair, because half of the country doesn't have any people in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they control a lot of areas where, you know, that are not populated necessarily. But these are generally small towns. But I just think people are concerned about the violence. I mean, the violence on journalists.
Yes.
There have been many journalists who've been killed. And they get, I mean, the common denominator between all these journalists is that they've written something against the cartels. Wow. Or they've put out some information the cartels didn't like or the criminal elements didn't like. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they murder the guy.
Yeah.
It's happening too often, George.
That is very, very, very disturbing. Give me your take also. This past week, Newsweek got an abrupt wake-up call because Newsweek did a survey in Texas of Hispanics. And they've got a response that I'm sure they were not anticipating, that 60% of the Hispanics in Texas, and they didn't just do just Republicans, just conservatives. I mean, all Hispanics, 60% of them said that they wanted a wall along the border. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, it's not a surprise to me, George, probably not to you as well. But it may be a surprise to people who don't know the area. Because if you look at what's happening on the border, George, it is really the people who are paying the price, you know, the people who are really being hurt are these local communities on the border. Many of them are Democrats, run by Democrats. But, you know the stories of the chief of police down there who's having to, there's one chief of police I read that has already spent his budget simply chasing down these people who are crossing over. So I'm not surprised. I mean, it's what surprises me is that somebody at Newsweek is surprised. That would be my surprise. That apparently, you know, the reporters. I don't know. If I were Newsweek, I would send more reporters down to talk to real people instead of interviewing Democrats in the House of Representatives in Washington D.C. They should send people down here to talk to real people who are living with the consequences of this mess on the border, George.
It really is kind of an embarrassment to a national publication that this should be a surprise. I mean, who are their reporters talking to is my question.
That's right. Well, that's exactly my reaction to it. I mean, heck, if you talk to people like Cuellar down on the border, I mean, he's been very critical of the administration, and wait until the situation really gets bad in Arizona, because that's the next one. Arizona is going to get hit with a real mess here, because one of the consequences of Governor Abbott's policies is that we have pretty much closed the border, and they're going to Arizona now, and Arizona is about as, I mean, they're not prepared for what's coming, George.
The one of the things that has been happening lately with this shift of more illegals crossing in Arizona and in California than in Texas,
mm-hmm.
is that some people are saying that it is partially a result of the president of Mexico trying to help the Texas border look safer, that they're trying to help the Biden administration with the illusion that that the matter is corrected and along the border, when in actuality all it's done, it's shifted. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of I have not specifically heard that, but what I have heard is that in Arizona, the state legislature, which is, I believe, Republican majority, at least the House, it has introduced a something similar to the invasion bill that we are highlighting here in Texas. And then when you think of areas of California, the problem in California is a slightly different one, because we just learned in the last couple of days that the budget deficit that they thought they had is much worse than they thought they had. The budget deficit is $78 billion.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money. I mean, just to put that in perspective, the budget surplus that we had in Texas was $32 billion. That's a surplus. and they have a $78 billion deficit. So even if you account for the fact that they're bigger than we are, still, I mean, that's a lot of money. So they're going to have to, I guess, either raise taxes and drive more people to move, or they're going to have to cut back on a lot of things. And how, you know, how can you justify the kinds of policies that they have for illegal immigration when they're running deficits like that? So I think the political situation in California is going to get really scary for the Democrats, because they don't have the money to give away anymore, George.
Yep, I agree. You know, we're seeing that in places like Denver, where they're cutting services, in New York, they're cutting services, so
yes,
that they can use the money to so they can reprogram it to help the illegal aliens that are in their community. So I guess that's going to be the trend that we're seeing.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're seeing it in lots of places where people are protesting. I mean, we've all seen these videos of Black Democrats in Chicago screaming and Democrats in New York screaming. But, you know, this is what happens. I the Democrats, they wanted sanctuary cities. I guess they didn't think they would ever get them, maybe. I don't know. But they're sort of, you know, they're kind of stuck in their situation because they publicly said, hey, send them here. We're a sanctuary city. So now that they have them, they don't know what to do with them. I mean, it all goes back to this crazy policy of the Biden administration to bring in 7 or 8 million people the way they did, hoping that they pass a meeting with a judge. So what are these people going to do while they're waiting for the judge? They cannot work. They cannot support themselves. So what are they going to do?
Exactly.
Well, that's what you're seeing in many of these cities.
You got it. It is absolutely crazy how this whole thing has played out. Sylvia, we're going to let you go, but tell the folks where they can follow you and where they can read you.
Well, you can always follow me at The American Thinker. We post on the right-hand side of the website. You can see my articles there. Or you can also Google Canto Talk, C-A-N-T-O, Talk, T-A-L-K. And that's where I have a blog, and that's where we do some of the podcast as well. And but you can always follow me at American Thinker. That's a great website. If you're not following American Thinker, you should.
Very good. Once again, my friends, we've been speaking with my good friend, Mr. Silvio Canto from Dallas. And Silvio, stay safe, and we'll be back chatting with you some more.
Thank you so much. Thank you, George. It's always great to be with you.
Thank you. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got our good friend, Miss Irene Armendariz Jackson from El Paso. And Irene is she is with the Border Security Coalition in El Paso, as well as she is a Republican candidate for Congress out in that area. And I wanted to get her on because, first of all, Irene, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. First of all, give us an update of what is happening in El Paso, because we hear that the number of people crossing the border in Eagle Pass and Del Rio has slowed down tremendously. What's it like in El Paso?
Well, appearances are very they're not true. They're not true. The word is escaping me. I wanted to use, but the reality is that, of course, with the Biden administration constantly instructing these illegals on how to cross without it looking bad on them. You know, they're going through the port of entry, so that's how you seek asylum. I'm not against that. The problem is that most of these people don't qualify for asylum, so they're still backing up the system. And not only that, if you live on the border, you know that we have a binational relationship with over 80% of the population being Hispanic. The majority of us have family, have activities in Mexico and in Juarez, and then other the people from Juarez, vice versa. They have family, they come to quinceañeras, they come to weddings, et cetera, et cetera. And so what's happening is, because these illegals are using the ports of entry, now they're clogging it for those that have actually paid their dues and followed the legal system to be able to have a visitor's visa. So now they're limiting them. Again, the hypocrisy of this whole issue is that even from the beginning, during the COVID situation, the pandemic, the people that actually had those legal visas, visitor visas, were not allowed to come in at all when hundreds of thousands of people were coming in. And then when they did allow them, they had to show proof of the vaccination. And again, a couple of feet away were the people that were crossing under the bridge. And without a vaccination, at the beginning, they started COVID testing them, but that was unsustainable. They also started doing some rapid DNA, especially on children, but Rashida Tlaib, Veronica Escobar, who's the lady that I'm running against and who's like Beto O'Rourke on steroids, their best friends, and Joaquin Castro out of San Antonio at that time sent a letter demanding from the acting secretary of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, to suspend this DNA, even though it had already revealed that over 30% of the children that were tested were not with their family. Furthermore, they had already tried to come in with another set of families. So what more proof do we need to know that children are being victimized and they're being recycled over and over again? And Matt, these children, they probably don't even have any emotions because they're handed from one person to another and for the adult's benefit. And so what we've seen here, you may not see them on the in the church that everybody sees them, but on our corners. I don't live in a rich neighborhood by any means. I live in a middle class neighborhood, and it's an established neighborhood. On our corners, our main corners, there's from two people all the way to six people panhandling. So that's what's happened here. In El Paso, we see them all over the city. I went to Sprouts. There was two moms, and each one had a stroller and two other kids running around, and they were begging for money. And they want money. They don't want you to take them food. They want money. And what's ironic is they all have these signs, and they're all in English. And you're going, there's no way. There's just no way you wrote that sign. And so there's a lot of evidence that these people are being used and manipulated for political gain from the Democrats.
Wow. That is really, really incredible. Now, there has been a very, very revealing news report in Newsweek this past week that has kind of shocked a lot of the liberals, because the survey that Newsweek did says that Hispanic Texans, that 60%, over 60%, want a border wall. Now, that comes as a big shock to them, I'm sure. I don't know who they've been talking to, but, who the reporters at Newsweek have been talking to, but that certainly comes as a big shock to them. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, how should Democrats react to that survey, as well as Republicans?
Well, I always say that my biggest complaint is with the Republicans, because I think we have the election on a silver platter, per se. And yet the Republicans that are already in Congress or elected officials refuse to use this to win elections. And let me just say that I am a big outspoken person about not wasting our time on parades and these convoys. If you're not concentrating on winning elections, if you're not donating, if you're not block walking, if you're not making phone calls, then you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time, because all this stuff does not win elections. And that needs to be the priority. In order to take our border back, we need to win elections, or we'll be stuck with this nonsense for at least another 4 years. And so everybody that's listening, you need to either go on my website, IreneForCongress.com, and make sure, even if you don't live in El Paso, that you donate, because the number one issue is that the top people in the Republican Party ignore a lot of the races that should be crucial, because they say that they're not flippable. But this survey that you're talking about is evidence that from the beginning, we should have been screaming from the mountaintops, no illegals, no illegals. So now what I'm screaming from the mountaintop is not only no illegals, is deport. We need mass deportations. And the Democrats are really good about pulling the heartstrings and manipulating people with their heartstrings. And then you have the Republicans that are afraid to recognize that unless you pull those heartstrings and you make people angry, they're not going to change anything. You know, I hear it over and over, and you and I were in a meeting in Austin. And what did they keep saying? Oh, we need to educate Hispanics. I'm sorry. My mom is a Mexican-born, naturalized citizen with a master's degree from UT Austin. What are you going to educate her on? The problem is that we don't have a recognition from the Republican Party, the elites controlling the Republican Party and those that are already in Congress, and saying, you know what, we need a mass PR campaign. If you have a mass PR campaign with a very specific message, you and I know what that message is. We've been telling them what the message is. Then people like those 60% are going to not go vote blindly. So it's good to know the survey, but then you need to have a call to action. And look, there's some people, and everybody's going to know who I'm talking about, and I'm not even going to say names, but there's a lot of people in our side, on the conservative side, that have all these podcasts, they have all these events all over the country, they spend millions of dollars, and there's no call to action, especially for the youth. I know there's here a couple of groups of the same organization, and when I tell them, are you ready to act? Oh no, we're going to go to D.C. to this conference. What for? Millions of dollars going down the drain. They're going to tell us what we already know at these conferences. If you're not impacting the votes, then any effort is useless. So you ask me, what should the Democrats do? Recognize that they're wrong. I would hope that somebody advise, or whoever really is running the country, would actually pay attention and say, you know what, Americans, especially the Hispanics, don't want illegals. My parents, I have a picture with my parents, and they're holding up a sign that says legal immigrants against illegal immigration. And that has been from the beginning that I've been telling everybody that'll listen. They don't want it. Why? Because they paid their dues, they followed the process, and now these people are not only not following the process, they're jumping to the front of the line. My dad was a construction worker. That's how he put food on our table. And when the Democrats want to give all these illegals, all of them, work permits, work visas, you know whose jobs they're going to take? They're going to take all the people that work at construction sites, that work anywhere where you don't need to have an education, because over 65% of these people have no education. So if you're a blue-collar worker and you're a laborer, you better vote Republican, because these Democrats want to take your jobs. And here in El Paso, we have the top Republicans donating to Veronica Escobar because they benefit from cheap labor.
Oh, my gosh. Incredible. That is just...
Yes.
That's nauseating. It really is.
Follow the money, right? Just follow the money.
That's it. Irene, thank you as usual. You are so good.
Thank you.
I love having you on our show. Thank you very much. Folks, we've been talking with my good friend, Irene Armendariz Jackson out of El Paso. She is with the Border Security Coalition. She's also a candidate against Veronica Escobar, the most liberal. In fact, I think she is the most liberal Democrat in Texas.
Well, that's what Steve Bannon said. He said, man, she is the worst.
She is. She's a Hispanic version of Sheila Jackson Lee at this point, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for taking time with us. We'll get you back on
anytime,
soon.
Anytime, George.
And we'll chat some more. Gracias.
God bless you all.
Thank you very much. George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. thank you again for joining us, my friends. George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. I want to thank you for joining our program, for listening to our program today. I want to especially thank our guests, Mr. Randy Clark from Breitbart, Mr. Arturo Fontes, retired FBI agent, my good friend Silvio Canto, national blogger from Dallas, and my very good friend, Ms. Irene Armendariz Jackson, Border Security Coalition in El Paso, and she is also a candidate going to be running against Veronica Escobar, the Democrat congresswoman in El Paso. So, my friends, thank you very, very much for joining us. I want to thank our guests. I want to specifically thank our sponsor, FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. They are the ones that pay our bills, and I really, really appreciate them. Please, if you want to know anything about FAIR, go to fairus.org, fairus.org, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Support them. If you support them, of course, you're going to be supporting us. So please support FAIR. You will want to know what is going on regarding the border, regarding legal immigration, regarding illegal immigration. FAIR is the number one place to find out. They are the number one organization in the nation that speaks out on behalf of legal immigration, on behalf of border security, and the border crisis that we have been visited on in this administration. So, friends, once again, thank you. Join us again next week, same time, same place. This is George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Till next time, my friends.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to fairus.org.